Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, March 18th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Let's get started with the weather. Today it should be cloudy and milder, with a high of 49 and a low of 23. Tomorrow, a high of 54 and a low of 33. Saturday, a high of 60, a low of 44. Sunday, a high of 63 with a low of 44. And Monday, a high of 56. Rain probable with a low of 43. Today, the sun rose at 7:32 and it will set at 7:36 p.m. Tomorrow, Friday morning, the sun will rise at 7:30 a.m. and the sun will set at 7:37 p.m. Let's turn over to the mini editorial. My dog was making a little bit of noise there. I hope it wasn't making too much noise for you. Okay, here's the mini. It comes to us from Keith Pease of Sioux City. He writes, "Fencing, razor wires, and National Guard troops for Congress, with gaps in the wall, fewer border guards, and extra facilities with relaxed pandemic protocol for non-citizens sneaking into our country illegally? Muppets and Dr. Seuss are mad. But video games like Grand Theft Auto and Mortal Kombat are okay for our children? Not my idea of progress, or unity for that matter." Okay, our first article is about taxes, you guys. Sioux City real estate values. Home assessments up 8.5% on average. Commercial values grow 6.5% as a result of Sioux City Assessors Biennial Review by Dolly Butts and Dave Driesen. A robust housing market in Sioux City last year has fueled an 8.5% surge in residential property valuations compared to the last biennial reassessment in 2019, according to new figures from the City Assessor's Office. City Assessor John Lawson attributed the increase in valuations for most homes in Sioux City to low interest rates and reduced inventory of homes, which drove prices higher in 2020. Home sales jumped by over 30% last year, despite the COVID-19 pandemic that brought on a recession. If you ask realtors, the number of houses on the market is probably a little lower than normal, which means it's a seller's market and they can ask for a little more, Lawton said. It creates an increase in value. Commercial property assessments in Sioux City grew by an average of 6.5%, while multi-residential properties, such as apartment houses and conversion properties, took an even bigger hit, increasing about 27% on average, Lawson said. Property owners started receiving their new assessments in the mail on Thursday. The percentage change in valuations varies house by house and neighborhood by neighborhood, with some home owners facing even larger increases, others staying roughly the same, and a few actually decreasing. In some of the fast-growing areas of Morningside, for example, average valuations jumped by about 13%, Lawson said. The 2021 assessments will be used to calculate local property taxes for the 22-23 fiscal year, with the first of two payments due in September 22. Many owners with higher valuations could face higher tax bills, but they won't know for sure until local governments set their new tax rates next spring. Other factors, such as the rollback, a state-imposed limit on assessments, and various state tax credits, also will determine whether owners pay more or less in taxes. State law requires city and county assessors every 2 years to reset valuations between 95% and 105% of the fair market price to ensure equity in the property tax system. Assessors consider factors such as local sales, new construction, and changes to individual parcels. Based on the 1,094 residential sales that occurred in 2020, the median assessment level was 89%, Lawson said. This year's increases are on top of double-digit increases in residential and commercial values in the last round of assessments. Under the 2019 assessments set up by Lawson's office in 2019, residential property rose by an average of 10%, while commercial property assessments jumped by an average of about 35%. State officials later ordered an additional 8% increase in residential values after finding the local assessor's office did not fully establish the valuations. Sioux City has roughly 28,800 residential and multifamily parcels of land and 3,200 that are industrial, commercial, or agricultural. Lawson noted that many residential values have continued to climb since January 1st, which was the cutoff date for data used to calculate the 2021 assessments. Since January 1st, some properties have sold by as much as 30 to 40% more than the new assessments, he said. There is a high demand right now. There's something driving the market right now, said Lawson, who questioned whether a population increase was driving the growth. Last year, realtors attributed the uptick partly to pent-up demand from the pandemic's peak. During the unsettled months beginning in mid-March 2020, they said fewer people purchased homes. By the summer, buyers who waited had returned to the market. Between now and April 1st, owners who feel their new assessments are in error are encouraged to contact the assessor's office. What we're looking for is to get the correct information on all the properties, Lawson said. From April 2nd to the 25th, owners who are still dissatisfied with their assessments can file an informal appeal, he said. They also have the option to lodge a formal appeal with the local board of review from April 2nd through the 30th. Under state law, property owners have the right to challenge their new assessments if they believe they are not equitable or assessed for more than state law allows. Other grounds for appeal include tax-exempt property that is misclassified or an error or fraud by the assessor's office. The Board of Review will start hearing appeals on May 1st and are required to finish their work by the end of the month, Lawson said. Owners dissatisfied with the board's ruling can appeal to the Iowa Property Assessment Appeal Board or in U.S. District Court. The former was created in 2005 to provide a free alternative to the costly option of filing in court. Here's a box of information by Dolly Butts, headlined How to File an Appeal. Property owners who are concerned about their values have multiple options to try to resolve the issue. They can contact City Assessor John Lawson's office at 712-279-6535 and talk with their appraiser before April 1st. Any errors found in the information will be corrected, Lawson said. An informal appeal process runs between April 2nd and the 25th. During that time, the appraiser can only change the value if property owners agree and sign a stipulation regarding the property. Property owners may appeal their values to the Sioux City Board of Review between April 2nd and 30th, Lawson said. To assist with the process, the assessor has put into action an online appeal program at WoodburyCountyIowa.gov. This program will appear only during the times property owners may file a valid appeal. It can be used to fill out the appeal form, find comparable properties, attach additional documents and pictures, and then transmit the information to the Board of Review in one step without having to leave the home. Our next article on page one is about supervisors might sell Woodbury County's farm. Proceeds would help be used to help cover jail costs by Mason Doctor. The Woodbury County Board of Supervisors is considering selling off the county's little-known 184-acre farm to help cover the funding deficits on the new Woodbury County Jail. Supervisor Mark Monson brought up the idea at Tuesday night's meeting. The idea is to transfer money from the county's general cash reserves to the Woodbury County Law Enforcement Center Authority, the city-county entity that oversees the jail project, and then to replenish the cash reserves with the money from the farmland sale. Monson said he wants to see work begin on the new jail site from the northeastern outskirts of Sioux City near 28th Street as soon as possible. It has to happen soon, Munson said. When they say shovel ready, that means you'd better have it ready to go. It's got to get done this summer. It has to, he added. The farmland, a set of parcels near Old Highway 141, has been controlled by Woodbury County since the late 19th century, when it was used to let needy people grow crops. In modern times, the county has rented out the land. Woodbury County Finance Budget Director Dennis Butler said the farmland might hopefully fetch $1.5 to $2 million at public auction. Woodbury County farmland on average is worth around $7,014 per acre, according to Iowa State University statistics. Butler said on Tuesday that the farm wasn't cash rented this year in anticipation of the sale. The sale would need to occur in the very near future, as spring planting begins soon. This isn't the first time this year the Board of Supervisors has considered selling the farmland, though the idea of using the money to help pay for the jail is new. Earlier this year, the supervisors looked at selling the farm to help cover the county's $3.4 million budget gap, which would forestall a property tax levy increase. The Woodbury County Law Enforcement Center Authority has run into a serious budgetary dilemma due to a dramatic rise in the price of building materials. Woodbury County voters last March approved a $50.3 million bond issue to replace the current jail on 7th Street, which is said to suffer from troubling deficiencies. Because materials now are so much more expensive than they were just a year ago, the project would come in nearly $8 million over budget. Supervisor Rocky DeWitt, who has positioned himself as a stalwart advocate of the new jail, suggested that there will be clarity on the jail funding matter soon. It's hard to pin Jell-O to the wall, but I think in the next couple of weeks, few weeks, we're going to have some answers and we're going to be moving forward, DeWitt said. The Board of Supervisors is expected to vote on selling the farmland as soon as next week, and a date for the auction sale will be set after the vote. Our next article is by Nick Heitrich. 7 cases of UK COVID strain found in Plymouth County. Lamar's. The Iowa Department of Public Health on Wednesday confirmed 7 cases of the UK COVID-19 variant have been detected in Plymouth County. The virus variant B.1.1.7 is often referred to as the UK variant because it was first detected in the United Kingdom. Researchers believe that the new strain spreads more easily and can cause more severe illness than the original strain. According to a news release from Floyd Valley Healthcare in Lamar's, the IDPH and local public health officials have initiated contact with these cases to understand their exposures and to gather more details about illness, travel history, and potential exposures. Health officials also have initiated the health monitoring process, which includes notifying anyone with whom these individuals have been in close contact. The individuals will be advised to isolate in accordance with IDPH and U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidance. One case of the UK strain was reported in Woodbury County in early March, and the Northeast Nebraska Public Health Department reported Monday that a case had been detected in its coverage area of Cedar, Dixon, Thurston, and Wayne counties. The IDPH confirmed an additional 38 cases of the UK variant on Wednesday, increasing Iowa's total to 63. 7 cases of the UK variant have been detected in Nebraska and 2 in South Dakota, according to the CDC. Cases of the South Africa and Brazil variants have not yet been detected in any of those states. Like the UK variant, the South Africa and Brazil variants spread more easily and quickly than other variants. Researchers believe current COVID-19 vaccines will likely protect against B.1.1.7. Because current evidence shows the current vaccines are effective against the B.1.1.7 variant, it's absolutely critical for Iowans to get the vaccine when one is made available to them. As viruses are known to change a bit over time, and variants can sometimes be more easily transmissible, reaching herd immunity will be very important in reducing virus activity, State Medical Director and Epidemiologist Dr. Caitlin Pedati said in a news release. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds announced Wednesday that she anticipates opening vaccine eligibility to all Iowans as of April 5th. With new variants found in Siouxland, health officials remind everyone to continue COVID-19 mitigation efforts, such as frequent hand washing, wearing masks covering the mouth and nose, social distancing, avoiding large gatherings, and staying home if you feel sick. Now we look at our graphic that's in the paper that shows coronavirus cases by county. Here's the statewide totals in our area. South Dakota, 114,966. Nebraska, 205,214. Iowa, 371,891. Looking county by county now, in South Dakota, Yankton County has had 2,847 cases with 28 deaths. Clay County, 1,825 cases, 15 deaths. Union County, 2,044 cases, 40 deaths. In Nebraska, Cedar County has had 919 cases with 14 deaths. Dixon County, 659 cases with 13 deaths. Dakota County, 3,951 cases with 67 deaths. Wayne County, 1,084 cases with 6 deaths. And Thurston County has had 1,138 cases with 16 deaths. Our Iowa counties: Lyon County, 1,485 cases, 41 deaths. Osceola, 712 cases, 15 deaths. Dickinson County, 2,285 cases with 41 deaths. Sioux County, 5,026 cases with 69 deaths. O'Brien County, 2,011 cases with 54 deaths. Clay County, Iowa, 2,011 cases with 25 deaths. Plymouth County, 4,036 cases with 79 deaths. Cherokee County, 1,603 cases with 37 deaths. Buena Vista County, 4,788 cases with 38 deaths. Woodbury County, 15,363 cases with 215 deaths. Ida County, 963 cases, 32 deaths. Sac County, 1,285 cases with 18 deaths. Monona County has had 832 cases and 29 deaths. And Crawford County has had 2,805 cases with 36 deaths. Our next story is about Sioux City dog returns home. Ivy reunited with owner after traveling 100 miles to Omaha. Scared and lost, the plight of a dog wandering around the northern edge of Omaha took on urgency this month when a social media image riveted animal lovers. The pup was tired and gaunt. Its tail was tucked between its legs. Its collar and tag dangled from a scrawny neck. Somewhere it had a home. Unlike many other lost pets, this dog would have a happy outcome. She would be caught, and her tag would lead her back home to Sioux City. Ivy, a black lab pit bull mix, had traveled nearly 100 miles over 23 days, including during the worst cold to hit the area in some 25 years. No one knows how Ivy got to Omaha, but her rescue came just in time, said Kelly Brown, director of field operations for the Nebraska Humane Society. Ivy had lost 10 to 15 pounds, and she had a badly infected wound where her collar had become embedded in her armpit. Ivy had lost so much weight she had stepped through her collar with one of her front legs trapped in the collar. When Ivy was found, she weighed 29 pounds, down from her previous 40 to 45 pounds. She probably didn't have much time left, so I'm glad we found her when we did, Brown said. But the story of Ivy isn't just the good news that she was returned to her owner. It's a cautionary tale for well-intended citizens who rush to help when there's a sighting for a lost dog. In Ivy's case, an outpouring of searchers triggered what has happened too often. It sent an already skittish animal on the run. Brown and Kathy Eaton, founder of Lost Pets of Omaha Area, said well-meaning people who didn't understand the psyche of a lost dog compounded the difficulty of rescuing Ivy. Many people hindered Ivy's capture, Eaton said. Numerous sightings of Ivy in the Ponca Hills, especially near the Alpine Inn, drew people to the area, which spooked Ivy. She was eventually captured a few days later and several miles away near 72nd Street and Rainwood Road. A homeowner saw her, called the Humane Society, and together they lured her into a garage. Every day that a dog is out, it gets more scared, Eaton said. Each time another person calls out to it, it freaks her out a little bit more. When a dog is lost, everything is strange to it. Scared dogs are rarely caught by hand, Eaton said. Most are caught in a safe trap. If a dog isn't successfully trapped, it usually isn't found, she said. Eaton said she knows of three dogs who were scared into traffic and killed, despite the best intentions of the person trying to lure them by hand. In the case of Ivy, some searchers became antagonistic toward the Humane Society staff, Brown said. They became irate we are trying to catch the dog. It did cause a hindrance, she said. Brown said she realizes that some people fear that the Humane Society will euthanize an animal it catches. That only happens, she said, with aggressive animals or dogs that are so ill or injured they couldn't be treated. Besides, Ivy had a collar and every effort would have been made to find her owner. Another thing the public doesn't realize, catching a dog is a laborious process, Brown and Eaton said. It involves talking with neighbors and learning the dog's movements and routes so a baited cage can be effectively set. And once the trap is set, it has to be monitored from a distance so the dog doesn't languish. So in the case of Lost Pets of Omaha Area, a crew of volunteers has to be available to monitor any trap. During the hunt for Ivy, an informal posse of searchers prompted Eaton to post a plea on social media, saying that people were making the dog's capture harder. Her post had an immediate effect, with some of the rescuers saying they would stand down. This issue points to a conundrum with Eaton's own Lost Pets of Omaha Area Facebook page. Its photos and posts about lost pets naturally prompt followers to want to find an animal, but Eaton said that's not the group's goal. The posts are intended to alert those already in the area where the pet has been sighted. Tips from those people help the owner or the group's experienced rescuers try to catch it. Ivy's owner, Hope, said she's not surprised Ivy was scared of others. With me, she's a big cuddle bug, said Hope, who asked that her last name not be used to protect her privacy. She loves to cuddle. She's really sweet and playful, but if she doesn't know someone, she's automatically on guard, barking and the hair raising up on her back. Hope's two dogs were in her brother's backyard when they escaped on February 12th. Just as double-digit below-zero record Arctic cold descended. The fence had a loose board, and the dogs had a habit of getting out. Typically, they ventured just a block or two. This time was different. Calypso, a Bernese Mountain dog, has never been found. Ivy was caught on March 6th. Since Ivy's been home, her recovery is monitored by a veterinarian. Her wound is healing nicely, and she's eating prescribed small meals twice a day. Thank you, everyone that helped find her, she said. I was so worried the whole time. I was heartbroken, honestly. So a Sioux City dog has found his home again. That's so nice. Okay, Woodbury County to give long-forgotten $30,000 bequest to Siouxland Mental Health by Mason Doctor. When Mildred W. Anderson died in November 1988, at age 80, she gave more than $1 million to a wide assortment of civic, charitable, arts, educational, religious, and welfare organizations. She gave money to libraries, to the Girl Scouts, to the Sioux City Public Museum, to the Sioux City Art Center, to Goodwill Industries, to the Salvation Army, the Gospel Mission, to the Sanford Center, to the American Heart Association, to the American Cancer Society, to Morningside College, to the Jewish Federation of Sioux City, to the League of Women Voters, to the Sioux City Symphony, and the list continues on and on. Perhaps the best known of these bequests was for $300,000, which was used to build what is now the Anderson Dance Pavilion. Anderson had met her husband Robert at a dance pavilion in Lincoln, Nebraska in 1916, and was inspired to build such a facility on the Missouri River in Sioux City. Another of the bequests, this one not very well known, she gave $30,000 to the Woodbury County Care Facility, commonly known as the County Home, off Old Highway 141. The stated goal for these funds was to furnish things that will bring comfort and cheer to patients of the County Home, which was a facility for mentally ill and mentally disabled individuals. The money sat on the county's books. A decade and a half after Anderson's death, the County Home closed due to changing state rules on treatment for the mentally ill. The funds continued to sit for nearly two more decades after that. With interest, the total today sits at around $36,000. Dennis Butler, the county's finance and budget director, and one of the few people aware of the fund's existence, said Anderson's request had been carried over from year to year and had seen fairly little use by mental health officials. They did do some things, but not very many, so it's just accumulated over the years, he said. Butler said there had been discussions in years past of what to do with the money, but nothing ever came to fruition. At Tuesday evening's Woodbury County Supervisors meeting, Supervisor Mark Monson proposed that the forlorn money be given to the Friendship House, a facility that helps people with mental illness socialize and learn skills. Mildred Anderson gave the county $30,000 33 years ago, and it's never been spent. Why that is, we don't know, actually, Monson said. Friendship House is run by Siouxland Mental Health, which effectively inherited much of the role the county home once played in the community and serves people who were in the county home prior to its dissolution. Siouxland Mental Health plans to use the funds for improvements and upgrades at the Friendship House and to help pay for special trips and events for the people who go there. They've got their eye on one project in particular, a park-type facility with sensory equipment like drums, a xylophone, and easels for painting or drawing to be used in therapy. Friendship House currently has around 25 to 30 people a day making visits, although this was reportedly somewhat higher before the pandemic struck. The Board of Supervisors on Tuesday evening voted to grant the money to the Friendship House. Officials with Siouxland Mental Health plan to submit quarterly invoices that will be paid out from the Anderson funds. Murder suspect seeks to be tried as juvenile. One of three young men facing a first-degree murder charge related to a January 1st shooting at a Morningside house party is seeking to be tried as a juvenile. Public defender Andrew Munger on Tuesday filed a request to transfer Carlos Morales' case to juvenile court. Munger said that in his motion that Morales was under age 18 at the time of the shooting. Woodbury County attorney Patrick Jennings has resisted the motion, saying that Morales turned 18 just 10 days after the shooting and that he was 18 when arrested. District Judge Roger Saylor scheduled a hearing for April 26th in Woodbury County District Court. Morales of Sioux City is scheduled to stand trial on May 11th on charges of first-degree murder, going armed with intent, and three counts of reckless use of a firearm. His brother, Christopher, and Anthony Bauer, 18, both of Sioux City, face the same charges and are scheduled for trial on April 27th and May 11th, respectively. The three are accused of firing at least 27 shots into a house at 2636 Walker Street, where 20 to 25 people were gathered for a New Year's party shortly after midnight on January 1st. Mia Critis, age 18, was struck and killed, and three others were injured. We have reached the halfway point of my reading, and you are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, March 18th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From Sioux City, formerly Sanborn, Iowa, Rebecca Becky Jacobsma, age 67, died Monday, March 15th. Private family graveside service, March 20th, Roseland Cemetery, Sanborn. Public visitation, March 19th from 3 to 7 p.m., Sanborn Funeral Home in Sanborn. From Sioux City, Kay Huisman, age 79, died Wednesday, March 17th. Private services will be held at a later date. Arrangements are with Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. From Lamar's, LaVon Marie Combs, spelled K-O-M-M-E-S, age 84, died Monday, March 15th. Services March 19th at 10:30 a.m., All Saints Catholic Parish, St. Joseph Church, Lamar's. Burial after the service, Calvary Cemetery, Lamar's. Visitation March 18th from 3 to 7 p.m. at the church and resumes 9:30 a.m. March 19th at the church. Social distancing and masks are required. Arrangements with Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Lamar's. From Mobile, Iowa, Kenny Connor, age 77, died Tuesday, March 16th, 2021. Arrangements pending with Rhodey Funeral Home in Kingsley. From Ponca, Nebraska, Daniel Joseph Martin, age 80, died Saturday, March 13th. Services March 18th at 11 a.m., Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Burial, Memorial Park Cemetery, with military honors. Visitation was held March 17th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the funeral home. From Rock Valley, Iowa, Joan Massen, spelled M-A-A-S-S-E-N, age 86, died Tuesday, March 16th. Services March 20th at 10:30 a.m., Netherlands Reformed Church in Sioux Center. Burial after the service, Memory Gardens in Sioux Center. Visitation, March 19th from 5 to 7 p.m., Memorial Funeral Home in Sioux Center. From Pearson, Iowa, Gerald Gary Lohse, spelled L-O-H-S-E, age 79, died Monday, March 8th, 2021. Celebration of life at a later date. Arrangements with Rhodey Funeral Home in Kingsley, Iowa. From Akron, Iowa, Karen Taylor Mortensen, age 73, died Sunday, March 14th. Services, March 23rd at 10:30 a.m., Plymouth Presbyterian Church in Lamar's. Burial after the service in the church cemetery. Visitation, March 22nd from 4 to 7 p.m., Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Akron, and resumes March 23rd at 9:30 a.m. at the church. Social distancing and masks are required. From Sioux City, Donna L. Uhl, spelled U-H-L, age 76, died Saturday, March 13th at a local hospital. Services will be 7 p.m. today at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service at the funeral home. Donna was born January 15, 1945, in Omaha, the daughter of Donald and Lucille Williams Jacobson. She grew up in Sioux City, graduating from Sioux City Public Schools. Donna married D.F. Doug Ull August 27, 1960. Together they made their home in Sioux City. Donna worked for St. Luke's for almost 20 years. She was a member of St. Michael's Catholic Church of South Sioux City. She loved wildlife, often feeding the deer and squirrels. She enjoyed shopping, the QVC network, and the radio auctions. She also liked boating on the river and the occasional trip to the casino. And that concludes today's obituaries. Our next article concludes our criminal stories of the day. Man accused of shooting at couple by Nick Heitrich. The gunman first shot at the couple on Sunday while they were driving in their vehicle, then appeared at their South Sioux City home and fired more shots at their house, each time the couple's 6-year-old daughter was present. Court documents accuse Jose Hammond, age 21, of both shootings, and another one involving a different person on March 9th. Hammond, of South Sioux City, was arrested Tuesday on charges of use of a firearm to commit a felony, possession of a firearm by a prohibited person, conspiracy, attempted first-degree assault, terroristic threats, and child abuse for two Sunday incidents in which Hammond is suspected of shooting at the couple and their child. Hammond also is charged with use of a firearm to commit a felony, possession of a firearm by a prohibited person, attempting first-degree assault, terroristic threats, and two counts of conspiracy for a March 9th incident in which he is accused of firing shots at another vehicle. No one was hurt in any of the shootings, with which South Sioux City police have described as the result of an ongoing feud. Police continue to investigate the incidents. Hammond is being held in the Dakota County Jail in a $300,000 bond, and his preliminary hearing is scheduled for April 13th in Dakota County Court. According to an affidavit for Hammond's arrest, Hammond was in the passenger seat of a silver car with tinted windows that pulled up alongside the couple and their 6-year-old on Sunday afternoon at 219 7th Avenue. The couple said that Hammond fired one shot before the gun jammed. The couple drove to their home in the 400 block of West 23rd Street and were entering the house when the silver car pulled up outside and Hammond got out and fired 3 to 5 shots before getting back inside the car, which drove away. Shell casings were recovered at both sites and one of the bullets struck the house. 2 Sioux Cityans to face trial for murder by Nick Heitrich. 2 Sioux Cityans have been ordered to stand trial for a homicide in California. At the conclusion of a 6-day preliminary hearing on Wednesday, a judge ruled that there is adequate evidence to show that Isaac Helms and Precious Green committed felonies and should stand trial for a September 26, 2019 robbery setup that ended in the fatal shooting of a Fresno man. The two were scheduled for arraignment on April 8th in Fresno County Superior Court. Helms, age 19, is charged with murder, second-degree robbery, and receiving stolen property. Green, age 20, is charged with murder and second-degree robbery. Helms is being held on a $1.5 million bond. Green's bond is $1 million. A third Sioux Cityan, Hannah Haywood, age 20, pled guilty in November to second-degree robbery in exchange for the dismissal of a murder charge. She also testified during the preliminary hearing. A fourth person, Alexa Ramos, age 21, of Firebaugh, California, also has pled guilty to second-degree robbery and will have a murder charge dismissed. Authorities believe that Helms, Green, Haywood, and Ramos set up a meeting with Tywell Truss, age 20, in order to rob him. According to the Fresno County Sheriff's Office, while the five were riding in a car, an altercation took place and Helms shot Truss. Helms, Green, Haywood, and Ramos got out of the car and attempted to flee, but were detained by officers dispatched to the scene. Detectives found a gun believed to have been used in the shooting, as Helms, Green, Haywood, and Ramos were found in possession of Truss's items. Here are some feature story news briefs. Orange City, the 80th Tulip Festival. Tulip Festival will be taking place May 13th through the 15th in Orange City, the festival's steering committee announced on Monday. The announcement follows the 2020 cancellation of the festival due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The popular festival annually brings in as many as 100,000 people from across America and around the world in a city with a normal population of 6,000 people. The many Tulip Festival volunteers have focused their energy on safely holding the 2021 Tulip Festival, and extra consideration for sanitary protocols are being taken throughout the planning process, the steering committee said in a news release. It also encouraged the public to follow ocfestival.com for more up-to-date festival news. Fourth graders show their views of Sioux City. Models and posters of local historic landmarks, people, and events are being showcased at the 30th Annual Sioux City History Projects exhibit at the Sioux City Museum from now until May 8th. After studying local history, 746 students from 13 participating schools created projects on Sioux City's past and present. Projects chosen to be displayed were evaluated based on their uniqueness, quality, and how they related to the community's history. Some of this year's unique creations include the Floyd Bottoms Flood, the Thorpe Clock, Tonawatonga, Security National Bank, and Sioux City's first McDonald's. Students will be honored at May 8th in a limited capacity awards ceremony. For the first time, the public will be invited to vote for their favorite history project in the new Visitor's Choice Awards category. Ballots are available at the museum's front desk. Admission is free at the Sioux City Public Museum. Also, protective masks and social distancing is required. Hours are from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday and 1 to 5 p.m. on Sundays. For more information on the Sioux City Public Museum, call 712-279-6174 or visit siouxcitymuseum.org. Here's the Sioux City 6, the best things to do in Siouxland this weekend. Number 1. The thumping of rubber balls and the sound of squeaking sneakers on a hardwood court. Are these the signs you're having an aneurysm? Perhaps, but it also means that the NAIA Women's Basketball National Championships are back in town. They're playing at the Tyson Events Center, 401 Gordon Drive, now through Tuesday. Number 2. The Sioux City Symphony Orchestra will present Symphonic Strings at 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the Orpheum Theater. Get ready for plenty of baton action as Maestro Ryan Haskins strikes up the band. Number 3. Ben Grillet, your Siouxland's choice for favorite country performer, will be throwing a release party for his latest EP, Church or a Bar. Seems like he's made his choice. The party's taking place at 8 p.m. Saturday at the Marquee, a bar at 1225 on 4th Street. A funny thing happened when Gary Lewis, a.k.a. Spellcheck's least favorite comedian, and a bunch of his stand-up buddies walked into Vanguard Arts. We don't have a punchline, but we bet Gary and his crew do. Check them out at 8 p.m. Friday at 416 Pierce Street. Number 5. See a tree, photograph a tree. In a connection with its 20 Artists, 20 Parks exhibit, the Sioux City Arts Center is partnering with the Dorothy Picot Nature Center in a park photo competition. But hurry up, the deadline for entries is on Sunday. Go to siouxcityartcenter.org for details. Number 6. Spring Fling. Equinox comes from the Latin words for equal night. This year's spring equinox will be taking place in this hemisphere at 4:30 a.m. this Saturday. Our suggestion? Get up, celebrate spring, then go back to bed. Our next article in the Weekender is by Earl Horlick. He writes, Seaworthy or Shipwrecked? Something fishy? These Lent-friendly sandwiches have us hooked. Captain Crook was a careless klepto with absolutely no culinary cred. Let me explain. As a child of the 1970s, I remember McDonald's, or more precisely, the Ronald McDonald-ruled McDonaldland, was rife with a handful of no-goodnecks. Heading up the fast-food crime syndicate was the Hamburglar, a career con who filched an unknown number of Big Macs and Quarter Pounders. Equally as felonious was the purple-furred Grimace, whose main vices were sugary soft drinks and lactose-packed shakes. Boasting an enormous mustache and a parrot on his shoulder, Captain Crook, who was essentially a pirate version of the Hamburglar, was a filcher of Mickey D's Filet-O-Fish. Even as a kid, I knew that the Golden Arch's fish sandwich was the least palatable thing on its menu. In fact, I even placed it below McDonald's tongue-burning apple pies when it came to sides to sideline. To this day, the Filet-O-Fish, which reportedly is made of Alaskan pollock, tasted more like a wrapper than it did of seafood. Having said that, other fast food eateries have upped their fish sandwich game for the season of Lent. Wendy's Crispy Panko Fish Sandwich. It's new for 2021. Wendy's replaced its cod sandwich with a crispy panko breadcrumby fish sandwich made with a wild-caught Alaskan pollock fillet. Served on an artisan roll, the sandwich is served with lettuce, dill pickle, a slice of cheese, and a creamy tartar sauce. What we think. Like many things on Wendy's menu, the sum of its new fish sandwich is greater than the whole. While the fish is meaty and the panko gives its crunch, the fillet is fairly bland. In this sandwich, the pickle gives a sour zing, and the garlic and onion-heavy sauce provide the flavor profile our fish does not. Our grade, B-. Popeye's Cajun Flounder Sandwich. What is it? Similar to Wendy's, Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen unveiled a new Cajun Flounder Sandwich to coincide with Lent. Coming in a shiny brioche bun, this flounder is a hefty piece of fish that comes with plenty of the chain's signature pickles, as well as a tangy tartare. What we think? You will never say Popeye's flounder lacks anything in taste. Much like its chicken, Popeye's fish is dusted with a cyclone worth of Cajun seasoning. Let's recap. Chunk fish plus much seasoning makes this a seaworthy sandwich. Our grade, B+. Culver's North Atlantic Cod. What is it? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That seems to be the way Culver's feels. Their fish sandwich, served with North Atlantic cod, lettuce, Wisconsin cheddar cheese on a hoagie roll, isn't new. However, it's as close to perfection as you're going to get from a fast food sandwich. Culver's sandwich is both weightier and meatier than its competition. This isn't always a good thing if the fish was substandard. But this North Atlantic cod was excellent, and the portion was ginormous. Don't tell this to Captain Crook, but this is the fish sandwich worthy of any seafaring pirate. Our grade, A-. Next local feature brief. Quick on the draw, Prairie Dog Contest seeks artist. The Sioux City Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center invites all preschool through sixth graders to enter the Prairie Dogs in Siouxland Art Contest. Entry deadline is May 1st for this year's art contest, which was inspired by the small critters known as barking squirrels by Captain Meriwether Lewis. Also known as petite chicken and burrowing squirrels, the Prairie Dogs were first caught by the Corps of Discovery on September 7, 1804. Kid artists are invited to decorate and create their own version of a prairie dog, creating a picture of their imaginings. Students may enter in the following divisions: preschool to first grade, second through third grade, and fourth through sixth grade. Artwork must be original and submitted to the Sioux City Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center or to solson@siouxcitylcic.com. Nashville recording artist Justin Kane in concert at Encounter Center. Nashville recording artist Justin Kane will be presenting Passion in Every Song, a live-streamed Betty Strong Encounter Center program. The presentation, which is a mix of country, southern rock, modern-day hits, and original songs, can be accessed at 2 p.m. on March 21st at siouxcitylcic.com and at facebook.com/sclandc. A U.S. Naval serviceman, as well as a recording artist, Kane won the Megastar Award at the Galaxy of Stars Talent Search following his service. For a complete listing of events at the Betty Strom Encounter Center, as well as at the adjoining Sioux City Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center, call 712-224-5242. Here's the feature article of the Weekender. It is Music Man, Symphony Director Reflects on a Return to Live Concerts. Standing center stage at Sioux City's Orpheum Theater, Richard Steinbach was likely on the same spot that legendary performers such as John Barrymore, Fred Astaire, and Katharine Hepburn once stood. Certainly Steinbach, a concert pianist who has performed around the world, is no stranger to the Orpheum. "I've played at Carnegie Hall, but it cannot compare to the Orpheum," he said, looking out into the empty auditorium. "There are very few places that compare to the Orpheum's acoustics, history, or beauty." Named executive director of the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra, following a more than 40-year career as professor of music at Briarcliff, Steinblick beamed while talking about symphonic strings, a concert taking place at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, which will mark the symphony's first concert in front of a live audience at the 528 Pierce Street Theater in more than a year. "After enduring the COVID-19 pandemic for so long, it is time to bring back music," he said with a smile. "It is important to the musicians, and it is important to the community." Indeed, SCSO, the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra, has been entertaining audiences for more than a century, although Steinbach quickly acknowledges that this, the symphony's 105th season, was a season like no other, for good reasons as well as for unforeseeable seasons. As with most public activities, the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra's slate of 2019-2020 concerts was curtailed when the governor placed restrictions on social gatherings last March due to concerns over the novel coronavirus. In a similar predicament as other fine arts organizations, SCSO had to adapt to changes. This included making the decision to plan for a 2021 season in the first place. "Our symphony is lucky that we will have a season this year," conductor Ryan Haskins told The Weekender. "Other orchestras have decided to wait the season out." Specifically, the symphony began its season with Christmas with the Symphony, a December 20th performance that took place, without a live audience, at the Orpheum. Instead, the show, which included a holiday jam with the multi-piece Haig Brothers Band, was telecast on KTIV as well as on SCSO Live, the symphony's new online streaming system. Through matching grants from the Gilchrist Foundation and the Kind World Foundation, the SCSO Live also allowed symphony fans to see concerts from the comfort of their homes anytime and from anywhere around the world. Not only that, SCSO Live also gave audiences a chance to view exclusive programming, which will only be online. For instance, Beethoven 250, a three-part chamber series tracing the life and works of Ludwig van Beethoven, in addition to virtual programs on string quintets, wind quintets, and the works of pioneering female composers, are parts of SCSO Live. "So is behind-the-scenes footage of the symphony," Steinbach said. "They were in the works before the pandemic," he explained. COVID-19 just made this move more necessary. Ever since the symphony was founded, it was designed to bring musical excellence to many diverse communities in relevant and accessible ways. This means bringing educational programming to students throughout Siouxland and around the country. This is especially important to a longtime educator like Steinbach, a Briarcliff University music professor since 1980. Steinbach was looking for a new challenge when he accepted the position of SCSO's executive director. "I am very happy to be a part of the symphony organization," he said. "It is an exciting time to be here." It has also been a challenging time, though Steinbach is pleased with SCSO's slate of in-person concerts that will begin with Saturday's Symphonic Strings. a show dedicated to the symphony string section, the program will feature music by composers like Grieg, Hansen, Granger, and Vaughan Williams. Also slated as a touching musical memorial on the Orpheum's mighty Wurlitzer organ by Kerry Groenwald, Associate Professor of Church Music and Organ at Dort University of Sioux Center. The concert season will continue with Simple Gifts on April 24th and end with Glorious Brass on June 12th. According to Steinbach, a soloist or collaborative artist who has performed in concert around the United States and as far as China, nothing can match the experience of seeing a symphony orchestra in a live setting. While SCSO Live provides our audiences with more ways of seeing the symphony in action, it is much more enjoyable in a live setting, he noted. Due to social distancing at all Orpheum shows, tickets for symphony strings will be limited only to current SCSO season subscribers. In addition, face masks are required for the audience. On the plus side, complimentary SCSO designer face masks, one per subscriber, will allow fans to make a fashion statement. Despite the restrictions, Steinbeck is convinced that audiences will come back to experience the symphony. "Our first show will be so special," he said. "After a long year, we all deserve to have music back in our lives." Well, everybody, that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, March 18th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.